I think Jack's in an incredible place. He still struggles some days. Yeah. Obviously, he's got a massive routine now of school and then maybe 4 hours training 5 nights a week.
4 hours?
Yeah, I think you're in an incredible place. A lot better place than he was in February last year. But I am, like, so proud of him because he's my strength, Jack.
I can see that.
And I just think, like, he turns his pain into power every single day. So he keeps me going. He's my best mate.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Dickhead. Just call me a dickhead.
Don't worry, I'll get you. It's fine. It's all right. There'll be something coming. Don't worry about that. It's fine.
Okay, everyone, welcome along to the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan, I'm here as ever with Ryan and Matt. How are you, Ryan? You okay?
I'm really good, thanks.
Excellent. How are you, Matthew?
I was fine. Do you remember a cup of coffee, you bald weirdo? And it's actually a cup of gravy. There's just something wrong with you. I don't actually know what's wrong with you. Like,
what I've noticed is that there's always some complaint from Matt because I always offer to make him a cup of coffee, you know, because, you know, I'm a nice guy.
Hold on. Can we go back there? Nice guy.
I either get told off because there's not enough water in it, or there's too much water in it, or it's not strong enough. Because I like my coffee like gravy. So
I think I've complained once about your coffee.
Once per coffee.
That does not at all.
Did make me laugh though when Dan showed me his cup of gravy this morning and said, "Look, watch, I'm going to make this for Matt." And he even put milk in it for you as well.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, yeah. That balances it out. I'm really pleased.
This is how much I love you because, look, this is not any old gravy. This is Marks and Spencer's gravy and it's my last bit, right?
Other brands are available.
So, what? We're trying to get the podcast sponsored by Bisto.
Other brands of
shout out Bisto, shout out Marks and Spencer's gravy. Yeah.
Other brands of DJ are also available.
Anyway, that's our gravy chat out of the way. Apart from that, are you okay, Matthew?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, very well.
On this episode of the Still Parents podcast, in fact, is this the first time we've had a mother-son combo?
I believe it is.
On the show. So let's introduce them straight away. They are Stephanie and Jack Ryan. Hello, Stephanie. Hello, Jack. Can you both hear us okay?
We can.
Now, you are in that there Liverpool.
We are.
Before we do start, can I just say, I think Jack's got more hair than either of us to have ever had in our whole life. That's a great
That's a scouse
head of hair.
Trim. A scouse trim, that.
Is that what it's called? A scouse trim?
Yeah.
But like, he's got, genuine Dan, like, honestly, he's got more hair than both of us.
I love that. The scouse trim. What's, has your hairstyle, Stephanie, got a scouse name?
No, I just think I've got the mum style now.
The mum style.
Just the glasses right back. Could you go out the door?
Could you explain to Matt and to Ryan what a wool is, please? Because it's something I learned a couple of years ago.
A person who's not from Liverpool.
Yeah, it's a person. So are we all wolves here?
Yeah.
I thought it was just people from Wirral.
Wool.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. Yeah.
Even like people from Southport as well.
Really?
Every day's a school day.
How did that come about? What wool? Like, do we look
I
like...
don't actually know, to be fair. No. Like, if you say you're from Merseyside, you're not a true Scouser.
Oh, really? Right. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I suppose that's a bit like Birmingham. If you're from Smithwick, you're not from Birmingham. From Smithwick.
Yeah. Yam. Yeah, got a Birmingham postcode, but you're not Birmingham.
Well, the yam yams, yeah. So yeah, Stephanie, let's find out a bit about you. You're born and raised in Liverpool. You're not a wool. You are a Liverpool lass. Is that correct?
I am.
Yes. Married?
No, single.
Single at the moment. Single and looking, or single and not bothered.
Single and not bothered.
Fantastic. I think that's the best way to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right.
And how about you? How about you, Jack? You married?
No.
No pressure here, Jack. Girlfriend?
Yeah. Staying single. No.
Girlfriend?
Staying single.
No.
Staying
single.
Okay. Now, let's be serious for a moment. How old are you, Jack?
15.
Okay.
We've got to behave.
Yeah, we have got to behave. I think you're, with the exception of when your boys came on, Ryan, you'll have been the youngest person that we've had on the podcast, Jack. So welcome along. And he's already the most mature male on the show today.
Yep.
So
we can absolutely.
What do you do for a living?
I study paediatric mental health in university.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Yeah. It's always quite interesting, especially because of what, you know, the story and what's happened. It's and the study route that you've gone down as well. I think it opens up some, we'll get into that. So
Is that a university up in Liverpool, is it?
Yeah, so it's like an open university, so we go online and stuff, so it doesn't take a lot of time away from me being with the children and everything.
Yep. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's brilliant.
How many children do you have?
Five altogether.
Okay, so you're a busy person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's get into your story then, because like we said, there's a lot to talk about, and including Zoe's Place, which is is that a charity or a hospice up in Liverpool? Which I know,
so it's a baby hospice.
It's baby hospice.
Yeah.
And that's been going through a lot of it's had a lot happen in the last year, isn't it, with regards to it? Well, it's just been saved. We'll get into that story. But as for you, Stephanie, could you talk us through in as much detail that you wish your story, please, with your boy Jacob?
Yeah. So Jacob was born in 2017. At 20 weeks, I found out through a scan, just a normal 20-week anatomy scan, that Jacob had a horrific heart condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. He was given a severity of 10 out of 10, and we were told that he was incompatible with life. We were offered medical termination, but I decided to carry on. I think my motto was, if he's still kicking inside me, we're still carrying on. So from that point, it was incredibly scary pregnancy, lots of checks, lots of doctor's appointments, lots of hospital appointments. Yeah. Being prepared. And I think at that point, the minute I was told what he had, I think I researched it over and over and over and over again so I knew what to expect. Every question that I could ask the doctors, I asked them, even if I repeatedly asked them, I still asked them. And then on the 3rd of May 2017, he was brought into the world. We had massive teams around us. It wasn't like a beautiful birth where you're just with your partner or your friends or your mum.
Yeah.
It was the whole of Alderhay Hospital and the women's hospital, doctors and nurses and midwives ready to take him. He was born, he was crying, and then he was pretty much taken straight from me, rushed off to Pico, where they worked on him for quite a few hours trying to stabilise him, get lines in, because he had to have this special medication that kept the duct open in the heart.
Right.
This medicine basically acts like he's still in my womb.
Right,
because
okay.
Because when you come out, the duct closes after so many days. So this is what the medicine does. And then after I was cleaned up, stitched up, I got to go and see him for a little bit. And then he was transferred straight over to Alderhay Hospital, where our very long hospital journey began.
Yeah, I mean, Alderhay, I mean, we're familiar with it. It's such a well-known, hospital, isn't it? With something you said about when, as soon as you found out the condition, you were straight on to researching it. And we've had a lot of people say this, and I think it's something which everybody does now. Is it possible to look at something on Google and not find the worst case scenario, no matter what you're looking for? Do you know what I mean by that?
You literally find the worst case scenario.
Yeah, you do.
And it's almost as if you're not happy until you find the one which you really don't want to see, but you then want to see it because to prove to yourself that you found it.
Yeah.
Did you find that you were Googling it because you almost wanted to find the opposite? So you wanted to find the case or the cases that were positive?
Yeah.
And that's why you were doing it?
Yeah. I think it was hard because I was single as well at the time.
Right.
Jacob's dad had just left. So it was so hard because I had obviously the children were so young. I didn't want to speak to family about it and put...
Yeah.
Upset on them. So I just put my head into Googling it. But I just wanted to find, as you say, something that told me it's going to be okay.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
it's not.
It's so straight away from off the bat, you were, tell me if I'm wrong, but there was a lot of maybe mental isolation because, you've recently been going through a breakup, you've got your children, you don't want to burden the emotions of the other members of your family. So you are just doing this. That's going to take a lot. That's going to take... How old were your other children at the time?
So Jack was only about... I'm trying to think now. 10?
Yeah.
Alexis would have been 7, 8, and
yeah.
Freddie was 3, I think.
So you're in full on 24 hours a day mother mode as well, yeah. All of that, you know, yeah. Making your toast, cereal, school runs, pickups, activities, all of that, and then
yeah.
you're going through. You're trying to process what's happening.
Do you think Jack at 10 years old was aware that there was something? I know that's yeah. probably quite a difficult question to answer. But you would imagine at that sort of age, so what's 10, year 5, year 6 maybe?
Yeah.
You know, they've got kids of that age have an understanding of what's going on around them.
Yeah.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. There was one comment Jack made to me years ago when he was in school because he was struggling to make friendships and whatever in primary school at that point after Jacob was born. I think we sat down and spoke and he was just like, how do I have conversations or anything with these people when yeah. their biggest fear in life is their action man or their Barbie breaking.
Yeah.
My brother dying.
Yeah. That's so mature to say something like that. Because yeah. like, yeah. you're like, I don't yeah. know whether, yeah. Listen, it's obviously a general thing, right? And it's something that you yeah. can't answer because you'd need to ask 10-year-olds who've gone through this, right? But
yeah.
to come out with that kind of thing at 10 years old, I think is like
it shows
massively mature and something that, for me, it's a broader way of thinking as well.
Yeah,
you know,
it shows.
Yeah, he's incredibly brave, Jack. I think even though it broke us, I think it kind of made us as well, didn't it? Like stronger. I always say, like, I honestly, if we never had Jacob, I don't know where our lives would be now because we're completely different people to what we were back then.
That's a phenomenally strong, mentally strong thing to say, especially you know, relatively soon after your loss as well. And to look at what I mean by that is to look at it with that positive slant. The whole, you know, made you stronger, but different from the people that you felt you may have become before. And I'm going back to you, Jack, to back up what Matt said. The you know, to be wary of those feelings at that age is insane because we get quite a lot of, we've had some young dads on here who are like in their, so we're all in our 40s and we've had some young dads on in their early 20s and there was one who lost his child while he was at university and it was just a university version of what you were saying. Everyone was just, no one was in that space to want to be able to, how does he relate? Because they were just talking about, you know, going to the pub and doing student life and stuff. So, Jack, what can you remember of that time? Because from this, we're going to go on to talk about the charity runs that you did as well. But I know, especially you know, for the mind of 10 years old as you were at the time, what can you remember, or how can you remember your emotions?
It was a long life, up and down. It was a lot of mixed. I was off school a lot. I'm pretty sure my attendance was something like 32%.
Yeah.
I was up at all hours of the night just taking care of him. I didn't want to go to school because I wanted to stay with him and look after him. So I sort of missed out on like the social aspect of my like that age.
I just think it's incredible looking at like putting you... I know he's yeah. your brother, right? I get that. But I'm genuinely blown away. Like about,
it's almost it's almost like you had to be old before your years.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you've felt as a boy at that age, because that's what you are. You're a boy at 10 years old. You felt like at that age you've got to step up and be the one that is there for him. And I suppose this is going to be a bit of a difficult question as well, because I don't want to pry. If you don't want to answer, that's absolutely fine. Did you feel that you had to be there and step up as well because they got the same dad, Jack, and your Jacob's dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you feel as well that you had to step up because your mum and dad had split up?
Yeah, in a way, because I knew my mum wasn't exactly right. Like I knew her mental health was declining. Even though I was a kid, I could still like see that.
Mm.
Like even though I shouldn't have, because I was a kid, and people keep saying this, I chose to because I wanted to because it's family.
Wow.
What a boy.
Genuine.
Just even having, just being able to know that is a thought process you can have. And sorry, I just saw how your mum was looking at you then, and I just think she's the proudest person on the planet.
I'm proud of him. I don't even know him.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, it's unbelievable.
If I had hair, I would get a Scouse trim in honour.
I just think for somebody of that age, at the age of 10, I mean, my background is I'm actually a qualified secondary school teacher. So I've worked with kids of your age, Jack, and I've worked with kids from, you know, the age of 11 up to sort of, you know, sixth form age and what have you. And I was a head of year and pastoral care. And I think of some of the kids that I dealt with who were just emotionally immature at that age.
And you've said this a lot, haven't you?
Yeah, they were just emotionally immature and weren't able to process even the fact that they, you know, they couldn't buy their energy drink on the way to school. Do you know what I mean? And to then compare against somebody like yourself who at the age of 10 has the thought process of that, not that you felt that you had to, but that you wanted to as well. He's quite flabbergasting. I know you like that word, Dan.
I'm keen to see your viewpoint at this point as well, kind of, because obviously Jack's come on the podcast today for a reason, right?
Yeah.
I know it's tough going back there because I don't go back very often to when we first lost Callie, and it is tough going back to that point.
Yeah.
But obviously you were going through this as well. And how is it affecting you seeing Jack dealing with that and you having to deal with your own mental health as well?
I think it's hard. It was massively hard. I think that's why I suffered massively with my mental health after Jacob passed. Yeah. Because in the time that he was here, I just wanted to hold everyone up. So I kept putting it to the back of my head. And I think obviously at that time it was the only thing that you could do, it was survival mode, but it was the worst thing that I ever did because I didn't let them feelings out. My mental health, unfortunately, took a massive peak after Jacob died.
Yeah. Can I ask what support you got from your husband, well, from your ex-partner at that time? Is that why, did you feel that you had, I suppose in the situation you're in where you've obviously got the kids at home and Jacob in hospital and what have you, you're playing mum, dad, you're playing everything. Mm.
Yeah.
Did you get that support which allowed you the time to sort of try and process what was happening, or did you feel that you were very much by yourself with the kids?
We were very much by myself. I was by myself. We didn't get on after our breakup. Our breakup was quite toxic and horrendous and stuff like that. We were both idiotic, immature, both played a part in that breakup. And we just had to have time away from each other because otherwise it would have stayed so toxic around the children in an environment that was already massively tough.
But was there any element of, I guess, is civility, is that word? But, you know, after, with bearing in mind what was happening, what was going on with Jacob, to, because I think somebody just, I mean, I'm talking about your ex here, but you've got to step up, haven't you? You've still got to be able to understand that human nature of that. This is a former partner, and they're suffering right now, and it's also my child too. This, if anything, and one of the reasons we're asking about this is because look, relationships. I mean, what is the divorce rate? It's like 50%, isn't it now? But on top of grief, and we've spoke about this on the show before, that's just adding a whole extra element that you have to deal with. So these things happen a lot anyway around this time that we've found on previous episodes. Do you speak now?
We do. Like, he's my best friend.
He is your best friend now.
Yeah, we get incredibly well. We have done for quite a number of years now. It's brilliant for the children to be around and stuff like that. But yeah, he's one of my best friends.
Jack, I want to talk to you about what you did, because already throughout this, what we've recorded so far, we just see what a phenomenal young man you are. What do you want to be when you grow up, by the way? Because it's going to be a director of someone, isn't it? A CEO of something. I'm just trying to say, one day when you're running a business, can you give me a job, please? Now, what do you want to do when you grow up?
It's either going into the martial arts sport, so UFC.
No way.
Fighting. Or work in the army, and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So basically, he's caring, but he's hard as fuck. Yeah, excuse my language, but like he could
Paddy Pimlet.
He could be
Paddy the Baddy.
He could come in here and probably beat the crap out of all of us.
He's actually in the same training gym as Paddy.
Oh, really?
He's
amazing. I love him.
But he's been really big on mental health as well, hasn't he? He's really kind of pushed that side of things as well, because didn't he lose a mate or something?
Yeah, we played a clip on this show of, it was a thing he did, in fact.
It was after his fight, wasn't it?
It was a friend of his who committed suicide, wasn't it?
As I say, men don't talk enough, lad. Men have got this stigma where, oh, if I talk like that, I'm a weak man. You're not weak, you're stronger than anyone. If you can go and talk to your mate and say, lad, this is affecting me. People think bottling stuff up makes it better. I've been there. If you can't make a split second decision, that'll end everything. And they've got to think about things. And the one thing I always say is, you've got to get it off your chest. That's something that I did. I eventually spoke to someone, and as soon as you speak to someone, it feels like a weight lifted off your shoulders. Literally, that is what it was like for me. I was like, oh my God, that feels better. And then I spoke to another friend, I spoke to my dad, I spoke to my fiance, I spoke to my coach, and it got better. And I know that my friend Rick, he didn't feel like he could speak to anyone without getting called a little girl. That's what we need to get rid of. Like, mental health awareness is, for men, it's ridiculous. There's no funding in the UK for it either, and no one does anything about it, lad. It's the biggest killer, I remember, between like 21 and 45. No one does anything, no one cares. And it's what does me head in more than anything, lad. No one cares about it.
Again, because it brings us back to the reason why we started this in the first place. It's encouraging men to open up and encouraging them to talk, because there are a lot of we're from an old school generation, isn't it? Where, when we spoke about this in the past, it's like, you know, man up and bury feelings and just be hard and don't show any emotion. And actually, it's just wrong, isn't it? Because you have to open up. And I was going to ask you about this as well, Stephanie, because you, as you said, you bottled everything in and you were just in your, I guess, survival mode, wasn't it? And you're dealing with everything, but it manifests and it comes out. How did you move on? How did you seek refuge from the mental battles and heal a bit from it? Or, you know, I'm guessing it's a process which is still ongoing.
So, unfortunately, I tried to commit suicide twice.
Wow.
And then I reached psychosis. So the mental health team got involved and I went through 3.5 years of therapy.
Yeah, wow.
And it was the best thing I ever did. Like, I always say, step forward and Mersey Care saved my life, because they did. Because I am a talker. I don't want to take tablets. I remember the GP saying to me, here's some drugs for depression. And I was like, but I'm not depressed. I'm grieving. It's different.
Yeah.
But as a GP, you listen to them, and I took them and it went very, very wrong. But then when Step Forward came about, it's kind of a service that sits in between primary and secondary, because they were finding a lot of people falling in the middle and there was nothing there for them. So I was one of the first to join. Yeah, so I was one of the first patients to join the Step Forward service, and it did change my life. It really did.
Oh, wow. Can you pinpoint, was it a tangible way of realising how it was changing, or how they were helping you to grieve properly, to heal a little bit?
Yeah, there was one particular day I'd literally just come off a meeting with them.
Yeah.
And I went to the doctors to go and get a prescription. I think it was for you, actually. And as I was coming out, we have a bridge near our doctors. Mm. And I just heard all this shouting and stuff like that. And there was a girl on the bridge ready to jump.
Oh, wow.
And I just looked around and I just said to the, there was a lad with her, I think it was their partner, and I just said, like, mental health, and he just nodded.
Mm.
So I just ran over to her, and I remember wrapping my arms around her and pulling her away. Oh. And just literally, I think I must have barefooted her on the floor. And I was talking to her about what I'd gone through.
Yeah.
You know, trying to wait for the police and stuff like that to come, and the ambulances. And I remember just lying on the floor with her, and she was literally ripping her arms apart with her nails. And by the time the police had got there, I'd spoke to her that much that she'd stopped, she'd calmed. And obviously she was taken away and stuff like that to go and get medical treatment. And I think that was at that point that I realised, like, yeah. I don't want to be like that anymore. I want to be better.
You know, the world works. It's just... Because you mentioned... You say you tried to take your life twice, and then the next thing, you are almost as if you're peering at an alternative version of what you could have been, and then you're saving. It's almost like it's meant. Now, listen, in this room, we're a mixture of religious, non-religious, and just a bit in between, and dazed and confused. That one will be me. But the fact that there's something that happened. I'm a believer that some things happen, don't they, for a reason. It's like you're in this position. This is a scenario which is now going to happen, and it gives you that perspective.
How do you feel now when you think back to where you were?
I'm proud of myself now. I think I've never ever been one to be embarrassed or ashamed of my mental health journey, and I now use it to help others. I don't think I could ever feel anything but proud. Obviously it was a really, really horrific point, especially the psychosis. Meeting psychosis was probably one of the scariest things for me. Probably for all of you as well. I had a woman who didn't exist.
Patricia.
We call her Patricia.
You called her. I love the fact that you've like compartmentalised it by going through the Patricia.
But also, yeah. I think what you said there as well, where you said I'm not ashamed of my mental health journey. Mm. Yeah. If you look at it in another situation, let's say for argument's sake, you broke your leg.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be walking around ashamed that you'd broke your leg. So there is no reason to walk around ashamed of a mental health absolutely journey, because it's right, exactly the same. It's just mental health, isn't it?
That's a great point.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
And I think
I think that's why Paddy as well, when he speaks about men's mental health, you look at Paddy and you see his fighting career and think he's such a hard man. But he makes it okay for them hard men to go, I'm okay, not to be okay.
Yeah.
He's amazing, isn't it? I was watching, I can't remember what it was. I'm sure it was on Netflix. There was a documentary he did with Molly, was it
Molly
McCann. Meatball Molly. Those two together are absolutely brilliant. And you just see that real side of them as well, aside from the fights. I mean, I love Paddy because he's one of those people who's like, if he's not fighting, he's just enjoying his life, isn't
it? But that again, that goes back to perception of what you see on social media and what you see on the internet and what you see on the news is these people are in the limelight, so people think that they know them.
Exactly,
You know, people think that they're known, and actually they're not. You only know their professional life. You don't know what's going on outside. And they're absolutely...
And that fame comes with a... We're all very cynical, aren't we? That fame comes with a price. Yes, you're going to have a lot of money, but at what cost is it? Because every single thing, especially these days, is scrutinised. It's a lot easier to be negative than it is to be positive.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to have a pile on and tell people the things that they don't like about them than it is to just say nothing. If you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm interested... Jack, from your perspective, because obviously you're thrown into this world at 10 years old, and as you said, you haven't really got a choice but to do what you've done. Has it made you more aware of your mental health growing up? Because ultimately, we know at the moment there is a lot of stigma. There's a lot of stuff around children's mental health, and you know, kids growing up now. Compared to when we grew up in the 90s, we've all got children, we've all got daughters. Yeah. If I think about it too much every day about the life that Etta may grow up into, that's my other daughter, I'm like, I couldn't live my life. You can't, because you can't live that way, right? You've just got to help them as best you can, right? But yeah, I'm just interested, Jack, with your perspective on that, in the sense of has it helped you be more aware of your mental health growing up? And
at first, when I was at that age, I wasn't aware of it at all. I wasn't actually really aware of it properly till around early last year, where I, myself, tried to take my own life, and it almost worked. So early last year, I was in hospital, and that's sort of where I became, aware of everything, because also, I didn't really grieve my brother, because I still wanted to try and have my childhood, but couldn't really have my childhood because
you
had that.
Jesus.
I can't.
You've blown me back there, because I weren't expecting that.
No,
I mean, I was going to say, you know, obviously there's programs that have been on recently, like Adolescence, that's really shone a light on teenage.
What's the world?
Life world and living life and what they.
We didn't have the social media thing.
No. The day to day stuff they have to deal with. And
my daughter, my oldest daughter's not old enough to be on TikTok, but they all sneak accounts, don't they? And she gets banned from it like every 10 days. And that's my favourite day of that week is the day that she gets banned from it.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to
speak so openly as well, right?
Mm. And I think that's the first time you've ever really spoken openly about last year, isn't it? I think he felt like he had to be strong for everyone. And I think it just took over. And then he did what he did.
So is this the first time, I know we touched on this briefly before we hit record, but I think it's, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, it's important for them to know. Is this one of the first times that you guys have spoke openly about you know, your loss of Jacob and the mental health aspect, and as well, I mean, the thought and, you know, attempting suicide. Is this the first time you've openly spoke about it, and also between the two of you, obviously in the company of others?
It is, but we are proud of our journey, aren't we? And I've said, like, me and Jack have spoke before about doing the podcast and stuff, and said, like, someone could listen to this podcast, like a sibling of a child who's passing or whatever, and go, well, I feel, do you know what I mean? And know that it's okay to feel crap.
I 100% can tell you for a fact right now that this, someone's going to hear this in whatever part, and we get some listeners in some, I mean, this is the thing, grief does not discriminate, no matter your creed, no matter your religion, no matter your morals, no matter whether you're a good person, no matter if you're a bad person, or you're absolutely wretched, it's all united by the fact that a loss is loss, and someone will hear this, and that's the reason why we do so many episodes, is because every story is unique, every story is different, but they are tied together, aren't they, by the loss of a child. So someone will hear this, and they'll absolutely resonate with them, and I think you two, I know I keep saying it, but you two are phenomenal. I mean, you've been best mates for life, aren't you, even though your mum and son, but
he is my best mate.
I'm interested to hear as well, because like me and Ryan work with people, parents, on a day-to-day basis. We've worked with parents on a one-to-one within group settings. I know my answer to this, but in general now, and listen, everyone has their worries every day, right? But in general now, after what you've faced over the last, 7-8 years, I imagine life can throw pretty much what it wants at you now, and you'll find a way you'll find a way of dealing with it, right? You know? I know I will.
That's a good point, though.
I say that a lot to the people I work with. Like, if you can live this moment, because we work with people who have, in general, just lost or in that early stages, if you can live those moments and find a way, I think if life comes at you, you'll find a way of dealing with it, right?
Yeah. We made the pact as well, didn't we, after Jacob died, especially after our mental health like scenarios and stuff. I think it was maybe the start of last year after you did what you did, that we're going to start living our lives for us. Yeah. And live the life that he never got to live as well for him.
Yeah.
And I think that drives us through every day to keep going.
And you'll use him as that. He's like a guide, isn't he? You know, he really is.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to ask you both a question. I want Jack to answer first, if you can. I mean, by all means, tell me to do one.
He's going to come down to Birmingham and beat you up, mate.
What was the response of your friends to what you tried to do? And did they have an understanding of why you tried after you tried?
And did they even know?
Yeah.
So I had two mates at that point, that they were the only two that knew. Even my group now doesn't know. But at that point, one of them, he didn't know why I'd done it. The other one didn't know why I'd done it either. But the only one that was like there messaging me and even offered to come up was I don't know what to say.
It's all right. Take your time, mate. No rush. Take your time.
So there was one there. It was like offering to come up, but he didn't understand why I'd done it. The other one, I don't even think he was bothered. He messaged me just saying, "Hope you're okay," and that. But I got a message like once in that week that I was in the hospital and I didn't get anything else. Even when I came back home, he didn't come to see me like he normally would. And that was like hard because I'd known him since I started high school and he was in my house every day. And he was like, he stayed over that much. He was barely in his own house. Like he was staying over like sometimes like for 2 weeks straight.
Oh, wow. Just coming over and eating all your food.
Yeah.
Yes. Did you do his laundry as well there, Stephanie?
Yeah. I don't think we don't like it's not his fault, you know what I mean? It's not the lad's fault. We all walk around this earth and we haven't got a manual for life, unfortunately. So I knew my friends didn't know how to deal with the situation either. And obviously young boys don't know how to deal with that situation.
To be honest, grown-up boys don't either. Yeah.
Jack's school didn't know how to deal with that situation. They didn't ring me for 2 weeks.
Wow, really?
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing. Again, it's a theme we come back to quite a lot. And it's interesting to hear that from Jack, because there's the amount of times we've had people come on and say almost the people that they expected from their group, from their close relationships, their emotional ties with close people in their lives, they weren't the ones who were there at that point. It was actually the person least expected, maybe someone more on the periphery of that social circle, or maybe even someone from work. It's amazing how these things combine to give you those scenarios to maybe find that pathway ahead, almost as if what we said with you, Stephanie, with that lady who was on the bridge, which I can't, that's just insane, isn't it? That happened so close to the time.
It's like a perfect storm, that, isn't it?
It is.
But it also shows as well that we've come a very long way with mental health.
Yeah.
But there is still so much work to do.
There is. Yeah.
Because, I genuinely think sometimes that it's, we do this all the time with the podcast, right? It's uncomfortable. It's scary to talk about this stuff. It's scary to show you have weaknesses, but we all have weaknesses.
Yeah.
No one is perfect, right? If they say they're perfect, they're lying.
I am.
I mean, Ryan is 99.9% perfect, right? Absolutely. Dan's normally perfect unless he makes me gravy in a cup. But what I'm saying is, I haven't drank anymore.
Looks nice though.
what I'm saying is that there is so much stigma still to kind of break through, because as you said, there's no manual. We're just all doing our best, aren't we? And it's okay to just show that side that, like, I'm not doing so well.
Yeah.
Jack.
Well, you know this yourself, don't you?
Right. Jack, what message would you have for anybody that is of a similar age to you, or whether they're a little bit younger or a little bit older, what message would you have to somebody that finds themselves in the same situation that you were in?
Just keep carrying on and reach out wherever you can, really. Because you do need to reach out, because if you just sit there not telling anyone how you feel, it's just going to keep building up until the point where you can't be bothered no more. Mm.
Do you know what? Jack's amazing. You could literally come and, I mean, to get people your age, like, probably wouldn't listen to people our age, you should need to do your own. The knowledge that you already have, obviously, I mean, unfortunately, because of what you've been through, but the strength, this armor that it's giving you now, on top of just, and I'm sorry, I know this comes across as incredibly patronizing, and I don't mean it to be so, but you are absolutely magnificent. Just the way you carry yourself, what you know, and
God, how patronizing is that?
And I know, do you know what I'm trying to get at? And it's, I'm gonna stop. But yeah, you understand the point that I mean. Can you tell us now about your you did two half marathons in 2 days for Jacob? How did this come about?
We were literally sitting on the couch one day because we knew about the news of Zebby's place potentially getting shut and stuff. And we were just sitting on the couch one day, and Jack, we were aware that one of Jack's teammates in Next Generation MMA gym was doing so many runs over so many days because he's younger, the other little boy.
Yeah.
And then I was just sitting on the couch one day and I was like, should we just do a bake sale or something? And Jack was like, no. And I literally went out for a cigarette. And I came back in, he'd messaged his coach going, I'm going to do a marathon. And I was like, what?
That escalated quick. Cake sale, marathon.
But once you decide, you do it. You're doing it. That's it. You're doing it.
So I assume you you trained then for about 6 months, didn't you, Jack?
No.
It's funny that, Jack, because I did a half marathon on Sunday with no training. I'm walking like I've shit myself. Right. On the lead up to this half marathon, Ryan was like, "I'll go. I'm going for a run. Yeah, I'm all right. I'll be all right." And to be fair, you were.
Not now, but I was.
Yeah.
How much training does a? How old were you at the time when you did this?
14.
Was he 14? Okay. How much did you put? You probably don't need to train at that age. Yeah. Did you train?
2 weeks, literally, on the treadmill.
You did 200 metres over 2 weeks. Because I did see you just giving page after we got you to when we were talking about coming onto this podcast, and I saw when this happened, and you did amazing with it, and this was all to help. So can you tell us a bit more about Zoe's Place? Because obviously it's very well known up in the area, but for people who aren't, and especially for our overseas listeners, what is Zoe's Place and where they are now?
Sorry, can I just say as well, there is actually a Zoe's Place here as well. How
is
in Coventry.
Is it affiliated?
Yes, they are affiliated. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. My bad, I did not know that.
No, I didn't know. Yeah.
So Zoe's Place is a baby hospice in Liverpool. They offer respite care for children from 0 to 5, and then they go into a bigger hospice. Yeah. What can I say about Zoe's Place? Is our second home still to this day.
Oh, wow.
Them girls are absolutely incredible. They're family to us. They still are.
Is there anyone there you want to shout out while you're on here? Because they're probably going to hear this.
Yeah, so we've got Flo, who used to be manager there. I know she's moved over to Alder Hey now. All the girls, to be honest with you, they were just absolutely incredible. The support that we got. They used to, like, you have so many weeks, well, days, a week, a month that you're given respite care.
Yeah.
And they used to ring me because Jacob would never sleep. So he'd stay up overnight time and all the other children would obviously sleep. So they'd ring me and go, "Can we have Jacob tonight? Because we were bored."
Oh, bless.
Yeah, of course, can go.
Oh, wow. And do you know what? That's so nice to hear. I mean, it's nice to hear in the context of it, especially, you know, over the last few years when, I mean, I know in some of the hospitals and how overworked the midwives are and some of the shit that the staff get as well. So it's nice just to hear them get that love.
So Jacob was a night owl, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jacob would never sleep.
How much did you raise in the end then, Jack?
No, just over £2,000.
I think it was over £2,000.
Yeah, over £2,000.
And your legs were all good? No problem?
Yeah.
Oh, he literally got up the next day, I think at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I got up the next day and fell over.
You're right. Yeah, you get to a certain age one day, and don't worry, it won't happen to you for years yet, but you do something like that, and then you have to slide down the stairs on your bum. How tall are you, Jack? You look like you're quite tall.
6 foot.
You're 6 foot?
Are you really?
At 15? What's your fight style then? Who's your, in the UFC?
Who do like take after?
Yeah, are you a stand-up game artist, or are you ground and pound?
Stand-up.
They're the best ones to watch. Otherwise, it's just two blokes hugging.
Yeah, that annoys me, actually, when they go to ground.
Just go for each other. Go at each other, yeah.
I think MMA, if I'm right in saying this, potentially changed your mindset, your mental health and everything, didn't it? Jack attends Next Generation in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, they saved his life.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
The coaches are incredible.
Brilliant.
They knew nothing about Jack's mental health when he started. Mm. But like, he does PTs now with like Nathan Fletcher and Adam Wilson. They're just brilliant for him. And then he loves his coach, Adam Venter. Looks up to him and will always look up to him because he's just a man without knowing. Yeah. They got him through them men.
Do they know now? Sorry, do they know now?
No. Two of them do.
Adam.
Not the main coach, Adam Venter knows, but I don't think he will ever realise how much the three of them save Jack's life without even knowing.
I think it's an often overlooked aspect of combat sports because they can get a bad rep from idiots a lot of the time. Oh, it's just the mental aspect of it, the opportunity to give somebody that release, isn't it? And it's spoken about often. I mean, I heard it mentioned on TalkSport the other day, and it's, again, it is exactly that. It can be maybe if you're like a sliding doors moment in your life and you have the opportunity to, it's a route, isn't it? It's a way to do that, to help with your physical and mental state of health.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's an we do charity boxing nights within the Lily May Foundation. One of our recent episodes episode. You might be an interesting listen, actually, for you, Jack, because it's called, well, it's called Ready to Rumble. I think it's about a couple of months ago, the most recent one. In fact, if you, you should come down for our next one. It's in Coventry. Have a little journey down and come and be our guests and come and watch the fights. It's exactly that. Because, in fact, if you want, we'll match you up with someone. You can probably beat up everyone by the sound of it.
We'll put you in for the Royal Rumble at the end.
Dan
will fight you.
Yeah, I'm too short.
I think, though, I'm pretty certain MMA and bare knuckle boxing are proven to be safer than actual boxing.
Really?
Yeah, it's something to do with the...
I can't be right. How's that work?
Honestly, it's something to do with the fact that because in MMA the gloves are... What is it, 6 ounce, 4 ounce?
Yeah.
It's 4 ounce fight gloves, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're not as heavy, basically.
They're not it's not as heavy. There is research.
That's some kind of reverse logic, though, isn't it?
No, honestly, there is research about it, honestly.
Have you seen the bare knuckle boxing? I mean, just to see the state of everybody at the end.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I think the reason behind it was because in MMA, you're aiming for all parts of the body, legs, calf, face, body, head, whereas boxing, it was aiming for one part. So obviously in boxing also, you see 30 people who punch the back of the head.
Yeah.
Where boxers have turned, disabled off it.
It is. I think that's one of the reasons why it's like what Jack's just said
there. How have you found this? Because it's nice... it's nice to see you smiling and, we've never met before. And I think your story is phenomenal. And I didn't realise there was parts of this that we've learned during this episode that I wasn't expecting to hear. But to see where you're at now, and listen, I know things are still in the process, aren't they? But how do you, in fact, Jack, how would you say what place your mum is in right now as we're heading into this part of the year?
I'd say she's in a lot better place, but obviously with mental health and stuff, like losing a child, you're never going to be 100% ever. No one's ever 100% in like mental health, so you're going to constantly be up and down anyway, but I'd say she's in an all right place as of right now.
I tell you what, you might as well come take my job.
What a man.
Probably doing better than me as well, to be fair, you know?
What a man.
Honestly, it's just the way he describes it. It's true.
Same question to you, Stephanie, about Jack.
I think Jack's in an incredible place. He still struggles some days. Yeah. With just normal teenage stuff, I think. Like, obviously, he's got a massive routine now of school and then near 4 hours training 5 nights a week.
4 hours?
I think you're in an incredible place. A lot better place than he was in February last year. But I am, so proud of him because he's my strength, Jack.
I can see that.
And I just think, he turns his pain into power every single day. So he keeps me going. He's my best mate.
I think he's my best mate as well now.
I want him on my side. I'm not going to lie.
I'm telling you.
Would you guys come back on and join us again, maybe down the line, so we can see how you're getting on and check in on you? And obviously, I think for anyone who's listened to this episode, who might want to have a question or two to ask you, because I think you're... I know that we're in the process of recording a show, so you're in that moment and there's still dark times. But I think, that, for me, it's the way that you process things and the way that you look at things now. It's very realistic, but it is doing it from that cup half full mentality, which considering what you've gone through is such a difficult thing to do, but you are.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Any final things you guys want to mention, or is there anything you want to ask these two idiots in here?
From a man's perspective, how did you find losing your children and stuff?
So we lost Lily in 2010, and even though that was 15 years ago, there's certainly a lot of change that's happened in 15 years as to how men maybe reacted following the loss of a baby in 2010 to how they react now, and how it's almost like they've been given permission to be able to be open and honest now rather than maybe back then. My way of dealing with it was to just throw myself into fundraising. It meant I didn't have to think about it. And I bottled everything away and I put everything, compartmentalised it, threw it all to the back of my mind until about 12 months later, and then I hit rock bottom. And it was frightening at the time. I mean, I never
Never thought, because you immediately think it's not going to happen to you, don't you? Everyone's bulletproof until something happens.
Yeah.
So for me, it was very much that I was more, I was the protector. I was trying to protect Amy, my wife, and Alfie, who we'd got at the time, who was three. So yeah, it was very much the protector mode. But I think that obviously what we do with the charity, and I live Lily's life every day anyway because of what we do with the charity.
Yeah.
But I think what we've changed with the podcast, and I think what I've seen change massively over the years, is the ability of men to be able to open up a little bit more. There's a hell of a long way to go. Don't get me wrong. But if I compare to what it was like when we lost Lily, we are in a completely different.
Well, if Jack's any example of the next generation, we're going to be fine. Look at the way.
I always sort of
more like him, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. And do you know what, Jack? It's funny how, well, it's not funny how you respond, but I've always used that our generation, so, you know, we're in our 40s, is that we are a pivot generation. So you have the older grandparents where a cup of tea fixes absolutely everything, and it's always about a stiff upper lip and just plod along, carry on, blah, blah, blah. And then our generation is trying to teach your generation, Jack, and the younger kids, that it's okay to be able to talk and express your feelings and stuff like that. And then within our generation, you've got a mix of both. And it's not going to be for another 20, 30 years until it will be the norm that men and boys and younger males are able to just be open and honest, just like women are. Because, and I hate to characterise it like that, but, you know.
Well, that's what we say.
It's the truth out, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It is the truth.
Yeah.
I've always talked about Callie. We lost her 9 years ago in June, and it's been my way of dealing with it. And the only time I didn't talk was when I hit the bottom and got my help, but I didn't get my help for 6 years. Yeah. So it took me, because again, like, we went on to have Etta and, you know, parenting, and thought it was all right, and then things happened, and I just, yeah. So, but yeah, my in general, my way has been talking about it and running like a madman, really.
Yeah,
right, that's how I balance myself out. And
yeah,
I say it all the time to my clients. I don't think any of us know what we're doing, really. We just, again, try our best. We try and give the best version of ourselves all the time, but. Like Ryan, I'm now very fortunate to, if Callie hadn't have been born the way she was born, I wouldn't be doing the job I'm doing now, because I was a sports coach for 21 years and I shifted career at 38. Callie is a blessing for me to be able to try and help as many people as possible now, really. Apart from meeting bald idiots when they make me gravy. So. But apart from that, everything's sweet. No, on a serious note, I have met some incredible people as well. And that's the other thing, as I've said before, I've met so many wonderful people since we lost Callie.
You're welcome.
Yeah. One of whom is now my boss.
But
no, I've talked. So I think possibly in this room alone, you've got two people who've been through the same experience who've possibly dealt with it differently, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Well, that's the point. Right. Back to what we said earlier. I mean, grief doesn't discriminate, but the subtle differences. I mean, listen, I've learned ever since we did our first episode, The Elephant in the Room, because I don't know what it's like. I've not lost myself. I've had friends who have lost, and these are two of my best friends. Well, Ryan's a good friend. Matt, he has his moments, you know. But it's just learning to try and see how you approach your life and the way you attack it. And also, it just gives that, it's an incredibly selfish thing to say, but to see how you attack life when you've gone through what you've gone through. And it makes me just go, okay, why am I moaning about this? Why am I moaning about that today? And I think just those lessons as well, and just seeing how you're just absolutely inspiring people. And we really appreciate you, both of you, coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
Well, one thing I will say is I think this is the first time I've ever had a conversation with people from Liverpool and I've not heard anyone use the word boss.
Go on, say it, Jack, for us.
No.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this episode of the Still Parents Podcast. If you would like to ask Steph or Jack a question, all the details are in the description for this, including a link to our app, which is available to download. It's Still Parents Podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise with Stephanie and Jack Ryan. Absolutely phenomenal guests on this. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you so much for having us again.
Cheers, Ryan.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Matthew.
Thanks ever so much.
And we'll see you on the next episode. If you'd like to get in touch, if you'd like to be on this show, like we all say, whether it's just for a whole episode, if you just want to come on for 5 minutes, if you want to do it live, if you want to do it recorded, we are here to accommodate you in whatever is the way that makes you feel the most comfortable, because that's the reason why we do this. So on that note, we bid you farewell, and we bid you farewell. Well, I turned into someone from like the 1900s. I bid you farewell.
I'll get you a top hat then.
Yeah.
Ta-ta.
Yeah, yeah. Just going to get on my unicycle and go out.
He's penny farthing.
Yeah, penny farthing, that's the one I meant, yeah. Take care, everybody, and we will be back very, very soon.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
All right, that'll be the end of the recording there. Thank you. What you got planned for the rest of the day?
We're going to do some shopping. And then he's back in training again tonight.
We're Paddy Trains Next Generation.
Oh, yes, yes, you did say that. Do you know what? When we get the episode up, I'm going to tag him in it. See,
yeah, like... and also, you know what? Because you've got a way in there, you could say to him, do you want to come on a podcast episode with me and we can talk about mental health?
Well, we're actually trying to plan something and bring Paddy involved at the minute. Because I watched, obviously, Next Generation change Jack's life, his mental health, everything. Because honestly, like, I do believe if it wasn't for MMA, I think Jack would still struggle with his mental health massively.
I think a lot of the content from this episode is that mental journey that you've both been on, and just the phenomenal people that you are.
But thank you for being so open.
But for your age as well, it's that's insane. That's absolutely insane. I couldn't do my shoes up at 15. I'm just...
at 15, I took the dog for a walk at 4:30 in the morning because I thought it was 7:30. I went out 3 hours early. I woke up in the middle of winter, took the dog, came back, looked at my watch. Like, it's pretty dark out here, there's no lights on. Came back, and my dad was at the bottom of the stairs with the clock in his hand going, what are you doing? It's 4:30 in the morning. And I was 15 then. So, Jack, you're already way ahead of me, mate.
What?